If you haven't been with us, we've been just started a few weeks ago, going through the Beatitudes, Matthew chapter 5 through 7. We're going to go as far as we can before the Resurrection Sunday, and then we'll pick it back up. This week is chapter 5, verse 7. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. And in studying this, we'll come to the point where we have to ask this question that's on the screen, and some would react right away real quick when if you even pose a question, is God always fair? Because a lot of times people who do not believe in God say there is a thing such as fairness and right and wrong, but they really do not have a basis for which to determine that, but yet they say it is. Johnny Carson said that life is not always fair. If it was fair, Elvis would be alive and all the imitators would be dead. Isn't that right? Yeah. Life's not always fair. You know, you lose people you love and things happen to people. And we look at it from our standpoint and we say, it's not always fair. So if we ask the question, is God really fair? We're going to see, I hope, that unfold this morning real quick. Back in the days when men were mad at each other, they would duel. You know, they would take a gun and fight it out in the street. And on this one occasion, this one real skinny little guy insulted this really big guy. So they were destined for a duel. But on the day that they were going to have the shootout, the big guy started complaining. He said, "It's not fair." And the little guy said, "Why?" He said, "Because you're only about this wide, and here I am this wide. You harder to hit." So the little guy came up with a solution. He says, "Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll back up side of you, and we'll use white chalk, and we'll outline me on you, and anything I hit outside of that chalk line, we won't count." How about that? Not that simple either, is it? No. But that's what we're looking at today. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. These are, as we've already said, these are really attitudes. When we say they're beatitudes, what they are they're supposed to be attitudes that believers in Christ have. We develop these attitudes because of what Christ has done for us. So that's really what they are. And mercy is not just softness, and it's not just sentiment. It's compassion in action. I meant to brief you guys, all of you type A's. We know we have some problems on the screen. And we're just having to live with them today. Some of the words are not mismatched like they're supposed to. I know that. You're going to sit out there. Don't worry about it. That's all right. Okay? We understand that. You reckon he knows that? Yeah, I know it. All right? Because I know a couple of you. You can't help it. You need to fight it, though. You need to fight it. I know it ain't fair. But that's the way it is. All right? The beauty of mercy. You know, the quality of mercy is one of the most beautiful characteristics of God. Because mercy is this. When mercy is given, it means the person receiving mercy does not get justice in what they deserve. It means you're getting something you do not deserve in a good way. That's what mercy is. And that is one of the prettiest characteristics that God does for us when we do not deserve it. That's what mercy is. And Ephesians chapter 5 says, we are to be imitators of Christ. So if Christ is about showing mercy, guess what? We have to learn how to show mercy. And that's, you know, a lot of these things, you have to learn them. You know, you don't just, the day you trust Christ, you don't automatically do all this stuff. It's just like anything. What did Paul tell Timothy? Exercise yourself unto godliness. You have to train yourself. In any way, and one of them is, y'all know this from, especially y'all who've been around me for a long, long time. Mercy is not my gift. You know, it's not. I've been working on it, and God gave me a merciful wife to help me work on it. But it is not my, you know, I work at it hard. Because as we're going to look at one of the things that unfold with the Good Samaritan, a lot of times my thing is, you deserve it. You know, Daddy always said, you go to bed with the dogs and you're going to get up with the fleas. You knew that going into this thing, so I'm sorry. I don't have any mercy. And I'm working on that, all right? I'm saying that's a weakness. That's not a good thing, all right? It is the Lord's mercies that we're not consumed because his compassions fail not. God links mercy and compassion. Aren't you glad you get up every morning and you can start all over with God? And say, God, thank you for showing mercy yesterday, but I thank you that we can start all over again today. Why? Because most of us would use them all up, what, the first year of our life? Or the first week or two of our life after we become semi-adults? An early picture of mercy Jesus gives us in Luke chapter 10, whenever the lawyer comes to him and he's asking him all these questions, what do I need to do this and what is that? And Jesus said, well, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. And he says, well, who is my neighbor? Automatically you think, what does he mean? I'm not going to love everyone, so I'm going to get to choose who I love? Who is my neighbor? Not everyone's my neighbor. I'm not going to treat everyone right, so do I get to choose who I'm going to treat right? I'm thinking out loud. But that's what he says. Well, who is the neighbor? So if he didn't understand automatically that you do that for everyone, he wouldn't ask the question, right? And so he said, who is my neighbor? So in these verses, Jesus explains. Let's read them real quick. And Jesus answered and said, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, and which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. You know, Jerusalem, the holy city, is up on a hill. And if you go down to Jericho, which is there at the Dead Sea, which is 1,300 feet below sea level. So you got quite a go down. And in that day and time, the road had all these limestone caves and things around it. So to go down that road, you know, you're going in a bad, all the thieves hung out there, and it was just a difficult place. You need to be real careful. So he's going down this road, and this is what happens to him, all right? And by chance there came down a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And likewise a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked at him and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him. And when he went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him upon his own beast, and brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence and gave to the host, and he said to him, take care of him, whenever you spend, if you spend more, when I come again, I will repay you. Now look at this. You know who the Samaritans were, right? They were the ones who stayed in the land whenever God sent a lot of his own people off into captivity. They stayed there. They intermarried with some of the pagans. So from then on, the other Jews looked at them as didn't have anything to do with them. They were kind of like half-breeds or something. They said, oh, no, you're not us anymore. So there's always been a major tension between them. So this guy's going down there in a priest first. You know who the priest was? This is the one that God chose. They were the ones who kind of handled the law. They handled the sacrifices. And he's walking down there, and he sees this. Now, look what happens. When you understand the law, you should understand the law means that you show compassion, right? All of that goes together. So he sees him, and he just goes on by, doesn't do anything. Oh. And then the next guy, who is a Levite, what he does was he was the one who helped the priest with the utensils in the tabernacle. He was just an assessor and help along. And he sees him, and he goes past. And then the last guy, who is hated by his Jewish friend, the Samaritan, stops and helps him. Boy, that's a contrast, isn't it? And he said, and that he showed mercy on him. Then Jesus said to him, he said, go and do likewise. Jesus makes it clear without a question who the neighbor is and what mercy is. What is mercy? It's something we get that we do not deserve. A certain priest saw him. I'm just making an analogy. Here's what the priests are today. They're the ones who get caught up in ritualism. You know, there's a lot of churches. I talked with a guy yesterday, and their whole church setup, he tells me, we do this and this and this, and I'm thinking, how does that help you live for Jesus? I didn't say that out loud, but that's what I'm analyzing. Because I'm thinking, and all it is ritual. We go through this, we do this, we do this, we do this, we do all this stuff, and what happens is, it really doesn't help anyone, because the whole purpose of all of it was to help us understand what God has done for us and then help us move that to another place in our life. So when you have something that you do that does not affect you any in moving it into real life, what good is it? It's just a ritual. That's all it is. And that's exactly who the priest was. He just went through the motions, but it didn't affect his life any. It's just a ritual. That's why we always need to be careful. Just because we've always done something one way doesn't mean that we keep doing it that way. Why? Because the more we do it without thinking about it, it just becomes something we do and doesn't mean anything. We have rituals. We do something here for a little while and then change it. Someone says, well, why'd you change that? That's the way we always do it. Well, we changed it so it wouldn't think, so you wouldn't think it's always what we do. Ain't that right? That's what it is. Then the second was a Levite. What was he? He was the legalist. He was the one that kept the rules. He was the one that helped out. You know what a legalist is, right? You know, they're the ones who said, you know, I'll never forget one of the guys years and years ago. He was a well-known preacher. He's dead now, but his dad was really, really independent Baptist. I'm not knocking independent Baptists. They're just different than us. That's okay. And you might be one of them. No hard feelings. Debbie's pastor that married us, he was right of the independent Baptist, if you know what that means. He was independent of the independents. Okay? I mean, he was rules to the max. No television, no mixed bathing. You know, they once kicked a girl out of the church for having a hole in the knee of her bathing suit, you know, because, no, I'm joking. But that's who it is. They have all these rules. Matter of fact, I'm sure one of these guys walking down the road from Jerusalem to Jericho and saw this man would have said, "What are you doing down here anyway? You shouldn't be down here. Well, you know, it serves you right." Kind of like what I said a moment ago. I'm not legalistic, but, you know, sometimes just in my nature, I say, well, you know, if you do that, that's what's going to happen. So, you know, why are you surprised that that happened to you? You know, I tried to tell you don't do that, and you did it anyway, so, you know, I don't really have any mercy on you. I should have mercy, and I'm working on that, all right? Rules. There's a lot of people that, you know, rules show us why we need a sacrifice. The law cannot save us. That's what Romans says, right? Paul said the law was a schoolmaster to show us we need some help because the law can condemn us, but it cannot save us. But they were the legalists. They didn't do anything to help. But look at this guy. He comes along and he represents mercy. He goes out of his way by one who hates him and shows mercy. Wow. That's what Jesus gave us a great picture. If you ever wonder what it is, just go back and read the story again. You don't have to wonder what mercy is. And then he asked the lawyer, he said, who showed mercy? Was it the preacher? Was it all the preacher's helps? Oh, no, it's the guy that he hated. That's a picture of mercy. Christ has shown every one of us mercy. What does that mean? It means you and I, and I don't know if you believe in God. I don't know if you believe the gospel. I don't know where you are. It really doesn't matter. But it is clear, and I can prove it without any question, all of us in and of ourselves will act like a sinner. You know why? Because we're sinners. And God in his mercy doesn't owe us anything. He doesn't have to do anything. And the fact that God shows mercy to us means we get something that we do not deserve. And that is, if justice is done, we're going to explain that in just a moment. Mercy is not softness or sentimentality. It is not just action or service, but it's compassion in action. You know, there's three groups of people in this story. There's three groups of people in this church. There's three groups of people in Byron. There's three groups of people in the world, wherever you go. One group says, what is yours is mine, I'll take it. The robbers. The two religious guys comes along and says, what's mine is mine, I'll keep it. I won't help you. And then the mercy guy comes along and says, what's mine is yours, I'll help you, I'll give it. And you have these, the beater-uppers, the passer-uppers, and the picker-uppers. Now, always. Church is full of all of them, not just one. The beater-uppers, they're going to do whatever it takes to get ahead. Rob, kill, destroy, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter because we're all made like animals anyway, right? The passer-uppers, they just do their own thing as long as it can help them. If it's going to cost them, they're not interested. As long as they can see some advantage in it for them, they might do it. But if it's just for helping someone else, no, they're not going to do it. And too often churches are full of those. And the last one are the ones who do something. They say, this is what needs to be done. I'm going to do it. I'm going to help out. Now, there's always a biblical basis, should be, for everything that we do or we don't do. Every action must be based on an absolute truth. There can be no mercy without truth. And there can be no mercy without justice. Mercy and truth are together. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other. Psalms 85 says, wow, how about that? When we show mercy, we still cannot minimize sin. And this is where we get into trouble. And humanity gets into trouble. This is exactly where we mess up. When we show mercy, we do withhold judgment. But when we withhold judgment, that means that judgment really is needed and is expected. What does that mean? If you are caught speeding, true justice means someone must pay a fine. That's justice. Mercy means someone you know loves you and pays it for you. But you don't get off. I mean, you get off, but the system doesn't get off. Somebody has to pay it. Anytime any kind of crime is committed and everyone gets off scot-free without someone paying the price, it is not justice. That's what that means. And that they are not the same. But you cannot understand mercy because what? Judgment means it is demanded, this has to be done. But mercy comes along and says, but I'm going to take care of this for you. It doesn't do away with justice. It doesn't do away with judgment. It takes its place. Mercy is the withholding of judgment, but is not the rejection or the alteration of truth. Here's how this works. C.S. Lewis, boy, he had it. He had a lot of stuff. Look at this. The essential act of mercy was to pardon. What does that mean? You're guilty. Pardon means you were guilty of something, you were caught, and you're guilty. Was to pardon. And pardon in its very essence involves the recognition that the guilt of the recipient. Someone did something wrong. I know now it's hard to do that because no one thinks anybody does anything wrong. Because no one in this world today has an absolute by which to judge anything. And you'll see how it unfolds. Did I go too far? Did it go one too many? Nope. It felt like it did. If crime is only a disease which needs a cure and not sin which deserves punishment, it cannot be pardoned. You know, if the president pardoned someone, it means they were convicted, right? Isn't it what that means? So if they're not convicted, if they didn't do anything wrong, how can you pardon them? How can you pardon a man for having a club foot? Well, you say, well, he can't help that. Exactly. But that's not what sin is. But the humanitarian theory wants simply to abolish justice and put mercy. Oh, we can't punish anyone. We have to show mercy on everyone, number one, because they didn't do anything. You can't do it that way. And substitute mercy for it. This means that you start being kind. Oh, boy. We could learn from this one, couldn't we? You start being kind to people before you've considered their rights. Well, you lost that right because of what you did. You have to keep that in mind before any mercy can be distributed. If you don't even understand that part, then you're already in a mess. To people before you consider their rights and then force upon them supposed kindness, which no one but you recognizes as kindness. So who just made the rules? You, because you're going to be the one who showed mercy? And which the recipient will feel as abdominal cruelties. He said, when you've done that, you've overshot the mark. Boy, that's where we are. That's what happens. Oh, we got to show mercy. We got to show mercy. Mercy detached from justice grows unmerciful. That is the important paradox. Wow. Look at this analogy that he uses. As there are plants which flourish only in the mountain soil, so it appears that mercy will flower only when it grows in the crannies of the rock of justice. What did we say a moment ago? Justice condemned you, so you are guilty. If you don't understand you're guilty, there is no mercy. So you take one of those away and you don't have the whole scheme. Look what he says. Transplanted to the marshlands, you take the flower that grows in the mountains and you put it down there in the marshlands of mere humanitarianism, and it becomes a man-eating weed. All the more dangerous because it is still called by the same name as the mountain variety, but it is not the same. Boy, are we guilty. Mercy. Oh, we just got to love them because, let's keep going, all right? Have you ever heard anyone say, is it fair for God to let my child die? Is it fair for this to happen to me? Is it really fair? What did Johnny Carson say? Oh, no, life ain't fair. Or the Elvis impersonators would be dead and Elvis would be alive. That's about the truth. Right. God is not fair always, and you ought to thank God that he's not. Why? Because if God was fair, you and I are condemned, and there is no mercy if God was always fair. It means he can't let anybody off. He can't pay himself, if you want to see it that way. We should be eternally grateful because God is not always fair. He's often merciful. God is not fair, but he's just and he's merciful. What do you mean by that? The justice of God says that sin must be punished. Every sin. Oh, well, you know, once you see that truth, this is where you start with the Beatitudes. Remember what the first one was? We are poverty of spirit means we understand that when we come to God, we have nothing and we are nothing, and anything he offers us is just by his mercy. That's what poverty of spirit means. That's where we start. That is the first Beatitude that we looked at. God is not some willy-nilly sentimentalist who just randomly says, well, you know, Terry, it's too bad. I know you're a pervert, but that's just too bad, but we're going to just let that go. God doesn't look at it that way. No. Oh, that's all right. You know, nothing has to be done about it. That's not what God says. He says, absolutely, something has to be done about it. And what has to be done is I have to send my son, Jesus, so that I can show mercy to you. Sometimes we forget that. The only reason Jesus came is because God is merciful. If God was only just, Jesus would not have come and all of us would be damned. Even if you don't believe in hell, one day you're going to wake up and you're going to find out, uh-oh, maybe I made a mistake. You got a 50-50 chance, right? Isn't that where it goes? Thank goodness God does not deal with us on the basis of fairness. He does give us a merciful option, but you can miss it. He deals with us on the basis of mercy. We don't deserve anything. Now, here's a misconception of mercy. It's kind of like the same thing that goes on in Matthew chapter 6. You know, everybody wants to quote, well, judge not that you be not judged. Come on now. If you stay in context, it's not complicated. What happens is you just read that one little verse and you forget the whole thing about Beatitudes. It's the same thing. Here's what it is, a misconception. And it's this. Some try to interpret this legalistically to say that all they have to do is show mercy to someone and then one day God has to be merciful to them. They can live like a pagan, never trust Christ, never do anything for God, but just because they show mercy to some person one day when they stand before the final judgment, say, oh God, you know, you got to show mercy to me because this verse said if I show mercy to you, nuh-uh, that doesn't work that way. You got to understand the whole context. That ain't even close to what it says. In the light of the flow of the whole argument of these Beatitudes, it's apparent that it is not a sort of legalistic approach to God that is in view. Rather, it's a heart thing. It's always a heart thing. You know, that's why Jesus made it so hard. In the Old Testament, it was, thou shalt not kill. Jesus said, you've heard that it said that thou shalt not kill, but I'm telling you, it's even farther than that. It's controlled by your heart. Even if you have hate, you're like a murderer. See how that moved? It moves from the externals. You can't just do something on the outside. You have to examine this part also, always. That's not exactly it. It does not matter how much mercy you show. If you refuse the shed blood of Jesus Christ, you have no eternal hope. I don't care how much mercy you show. That's not what the text says. We will not be able at the judgment to stand up and say, oh, God, you have to. You know, it's mandated. You have to. And look at this verse I'm fitting to read you. He that despised Moses' law, you know what Moses' law is, right? The Pentateuch, all that we have there in Genesis, Exodus, right on down to mainly to Deuteronomy, the giving of the law, died without mercy under one or two witnesses. Many will try to say, well, that's just the Old Testament. We live under grace now. Really? Some people try to say that. That's not what it says. Here's the whole thing. Now, of how much sorer, how much more radical deep punishment, suppose you, shall he thought worthy who hath trodden underfoot the Son of God and has counted the blood of the covenant with which he was sanctified, an unholy thing, and has done despite to the Spirit of grace. What does that verse say? If you step on the blood of Jesus, means I don't want anything to do with Jesus, I don't want anything to do with God, that's trodden underfoot Jesus. You step on him. You don't have any use for him. If you do that, I don't care how much mercy you show in the world. When it comes judgment day, you are done. That's what he's saying. All kind of witnesses. You don't just get mercy by showing mercy. The only true mercy you have to start with is the fact that you accept the mercy that God is offering to you. He's not going to make you take it. Doesn't make you do anything. And here's how it turns out. Mercy received results in mercy shown. You know, how many times did Jesus use that analogy? He said, you know, to one who's been forgiven the most, that's the one who forgives the most. If you understand how much mercy God has shown us by letting Jesus take our place, If you understand that first, then you should be able to have a clue what it means to show mercy to someone else, because you've had the ultimate mercy. That's all that means. Look at this verse. Jesus is given blessings. It does not mean that we are forgiven just because we show mercy. And it says, judge not that you be not judged. Just go back and study that context. You will be judged. Every one of us will be judged. And you'll be judged mainly on what you did with Jesus. Not church membership, not baptism, not rituals. You will stand before Jesus one day, and there'll be nothing but miles and miles but a throne and a face and a chair. And God's going to say, what did you do with my son Jesus? That's it. I don't care how much mercy you've shown. I don't care anything else that goes on. Nothing else is going to count then. That's what he says. When you trod under the foot Jesus' blood, it does not mean we show mercy because we ourselves are forgiven. It means we show mercy because we know what it means to have been shown mercy. You know, it's amazing. It's amazing what you can learn from humanity if you pay attention. You know, over the years, one thing I've learned is that poor people will help you a lot quicker than rich people. I'm not saying rich is bad. I didn't say that. Don't go out and say, he said rich is bad. I didn't say that. But my experience has been poor people who really know what it is to have a tough time, they will help people a lot quicker than people that has a lot. The people who really understand how to show mercy are the ones who really understand what mercy is. Unless you've committed your life to Jesus, you don't even know what it is to start with. And then once you take that step, then you start to realize, what all did he do so I would not be judged? He died. All of you. All of us. If we have a chance of getting in heaven, that is the only way. That's it. And that's exactly what it means. To ones who understand what mercy is, they will show mercy. It is an attitude that we have. With the merciful, you will show yourself merciful. With the upright man, you will show yourself upright. Psalms 18:25. The more mercy we show, the more mercy we get. Isn't that amazing? How does that work out? God just takes care of that. When you're a merciful person, somehow God in his whole scheme, and I don't just mean mercy from him, okay? You just have mercy in other areas of your life when you show mercy. That's just it. That's just the way that goes, one of those things that God put together. But we cannot get it until we have first come to that first place. You know, that's the first thing. You're sitting here. Do you understand that you're a sinner? Oh, well, I'm not a sinner. Well, you're the first one. You're not a sinner. Who's got a drone? We can follow you for about 30, 40 minutes. We can prove you're a sinner. We don't have to ask your parents or your family, right? All of us. You know, that's the problem. We've done away with that lock in 1600. That's what they did. They said, you know, our problem is no one was sinning before you made it a law to sin. Then Rousseau comes along, and now we have Freud who tells, well, here's the main problem, and here we are now, where nobody's guilty because nobody's done anything wrong. We just stop applying these laws to everyone. You know, if you'll quit telling them what to do is wrong, they'll quit doing wrong. Really? You tell your child, you quit telling your child to do wrong, and they'll quit doing wrong. Is that right? Anyone prove that one for me? Absolutely. When we receive the great mercy from God, then we understand that we can give it. You know, how is it? What, remember the story of the talents? He's been forgiven the most, so who should be willing to forgive the most? The one who's been forgiven the most. Can I forgive Otis over there for something that doesn't matter at all when Jesus has given me for eternity? And if I can't do that, there's something wrong with my balance. And that's exactly what he's talking about. But you have to start applying that one. Because some of you, like me, by nature, is not a merciful person. You know, I'm working on it. And if you'd just known me 25 years ago, you'd say, boy, you come a long way. I got a long way to go. I still kind of, well, I don't need to talk about that anymore. Those who have received mercy know how to show it more than anyone else. Receive God's love and mercy. and show it to someone else. Well, they don't deserve it. Right. That's why it's mercy. You don't deserve it either. And I don't deserve it either. That's why it's mercy. Let's pray. Lord, thank you. Thank you that you are a merciful God. In your justice, you demand judgment. So you satisfy your own judgment with your own son so that legally you can show mercy to us. Father, thank you. Thank you for your show of compassion and mercy on us by allowing Jesus to die for us. Help us begin to grasp how we can show mercy so that people want to know you because of what you're doing in our lives. Thank you for loving us first. In Jesus' name, amen.